This is The Instigators, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome back. It's hour two of three, and Instigators Monday from the Seneca studio. We're excited to be back with Marty. I'm Brian. Amherst lost last night 6-1 to Laval. Game two in their best of five series goes tonight. We'll be in Rotch on Wednesday, building up for game three at Blue Cross Arena. Looking forward to that, but would love it if the season or the series is even at one they do so.
Would be fun to see the crowd on Wednesday night in Rochester just going nuts with the Amherst being able to tie it up tonight. But I have a quick question for you. Mm-hmm. Extended hours today, full 3 hours of the Instigators. What do you usually do at 1:02 p.m.? After the show? Like, what's your routine when we usually end at 1, and what's the next 5 minutes after?
I would say that since we started doing this in late September, that no 2 days have been the same.
It always is the same for me.
Really? Yeah. It always feels like, are we doing a podcast? Do I need to get on the practice report? Do I, like, and is it a game day? Is it, you know, am I going to Rochester? What are my kids doing? Like, it never feels the same. Other than, I often feel when we're doing it on Zoom that there's just this, you know, uncomfortable hastiness to ending, like, from our crew, which is usually transitioning into One Bills Live. Or us trying to, you know, dissect something we talked about, project what we're going to do in the days ahead. It's just, it's just an odd situation. So today, walking out of this building at 3 o'clock is going to be something we, quite honestly, have not experienced since we started doing this in September.
No, it will be where I have to rush out, number one. So that's always the case. But the thing I always do at 12:57 or close to, sometimes we stay on a little longer, I got to go because I'm from home most of the time. I got to go and make sure that my dog did not pull the garbage out of the bathroom, did not rip something out, did not, like, it's just, it's always my concern. Like, even though it's only an hour, and usually we're on the Zoom for an hour and a half to almost 2 hours total. I always have to run out. And people that are doing work from home and have pets and dogs especially, sometimes you shut the door to your room so you can have your studio, your time, not have a dog jump on your lap or bark in the background. Well, when you open the door back after you've been kind of hiding for an hour or two, there could be surprises. So you're hoping there's no such surprises around.
All right. We'll have Dane Smith of the Bandits coming up here shortly. NHL tonight, there's two games, including the possible elimination of the President's Trophy winning Florida Panthers. They are down 3-0.
Dane is on, so we'll go right to him.
Perfect. Hi, Dane. Welcome in. It's
how's it going, guys?
It's just really wonderful to have this opportunity to chat. Congratulations on the victories against Toronto, which were as dramatic as could be. I sometimes don't like asking this question because it sounds way too simple, and we can kind of all get painted with the same brush asking it. But truly, what are you feeling after a series like that and everything that you are at the forefront of in trying to give back to this community right now?
I'm feeling beat up. I'm feeling emotional, and I'm feeling a lot of things right now. It's been a crazy road to kind of get to where we're at. You start at the beginning of the season and your main goal is to get into playoffs. And then your next goal is to finish first. And then your next goal is to kind of obviously win each playoff game. And now we have the opportunity to play in the finals. It's unbelievable. And then with obviously everything going on in Buffalo, it's been a roller coaster ride, but, we're hoping to kind of put smiles on a few people's face if we can, to kind of, win in these games and hopefully win a championship here in Buffalo.
Dane, what's been the conversation with you and your teammates? Obviously, I feel like more than any other sports team in Buffalo, the community feeling around Bandit Land is the strongest, in my opinion. Like, you know, you can cheer for the Bills and it's the NFL and the Sabres, the NHL, but the fans that cheer and follow the Bandits. They feel a sense of community, of brotherhood, of partnership. It's like everybody's in the same group. So what's been the conversation with you and your teammates and even some interaction you've had with some of the fans?
Yeah, it's been incredible all year. It's a weird year. Obviously, it's the first year off the COVID. It's been 2 years since we've played, and we've had the best attendance throughout this year. And it just goes to show that Bandit Land is the best place to play. And they've had our back throughout this process. And obviously, with everything going on in the world and everything that just happened in Buffalo, we still end up having 10,000 plus fans at our last game. And then even going into playing in Toronto, they traveled so well, and it felt like we were in Buffalo. It was crazy. I remember just standing during the anthem, before the anthem, sorry, and they had "Let's Go Bandits" chants going on, and I honestly felt like we were in Buffalo. It was that loud. It was crazy to see, and they've been our backbone all year, and we just want to bring home a championship. They deserve it. It's been since 2008, so we're looking forward to the challenge.
So take us through the series. I want to say from an individual standpoint, but I can't separate the two of you in this moment. So for you and Josh to have the series that you had in the 18-17 win, 11 points for him, 10 for you. In the 10-9 win, it's 8 points for Josh, 6 points for you. But like every moment is like this. What was that like, knowing how much pressure there was on the two of you to get the team back to this championship series?
Yeah, there's a lot of pressure. I mean, you look at any sport, you need your best players to be playing their best lacrosse in the playoffs. And I look forward to that. I look forward to the opportunity. I know I had, I think, my worst game of my career versus Toronto, our last regular season game of the year, and everybody who's talking about that and stuff like that. So I knew I needed to make an impact in the Albany game, my first Albany game. And then obviously the Toronto series, it was a huge head-to-head matchup. That being said, at the end of the day, my big thing for myself as I've grown as a player is my leadership, whether that be points, whether it be being vocal or leading by example and trying to pick up that loose ball. It comes down to those little things, and those points will come with it, and they happen to do so. And I think Josh has seen that as well. So we're trying to lead by example to the best of our ability. And luckily we've done so this far, but we still have another series, and we're hoping to continue that success.
As I've told you earlier this year, my kid's playing field lacrosse in high school. And I've gone to really pay attention to the details. Like, I would go to you guys' games and I would just be a fan. I had a couple beers, a hot dog, and let's go cheer it on. But now I'm paying attention to the details. And the amount of space that you guys have to try to score goals is so limited. I have no idea. If I put a wall up and I put holes that are the size of, I don't know, like a gallon of milk, like 5 inches by 5 inches all over the place, would you be able to pick that spot? Like, is it luck, or can you guys really put it anywhere you want in the net?
I'll be honest. Sometimes it's luck. But that being said, and if you're like hands free and you see a spot, you can hit it for the most part. These goalies in this league are unbelievable. I know the past two goalies we played in the series arguably are the top three goalies. Obviously, we have one of them.
Yep.
And I think Albany's goalie is one of the top three, and I think Toronto's goalie is one of the top three. And those two other two goalies are big guys. They cover up, like you said, the whole net, and you really have to pick your spots. And again, sometimes you just throw it on net and it goes in, but sometimes you really do have to bear down and pick a spot. And there's not much room, but if you can kind of get a goalie moving a little bit, it helps a lot.
You talked about being more vocal and just being a leader in many areas throughout the season. And then to step forward at a time of ultimate grief for our community, what allowed you to feel what you did in the moment to take that next step, to put yourself out there, to make a donation for every goal, which then inspired others to follow. I'm really interested in just knowing how you felt taking this kind of step publicly the way you did.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a pretty soft-spoken guy. I don't like to talk about my emotions. And one of those things, when George Floyd murder happened, it was one of those things I used my platform to my advantage. I saw a lot of great things come of it. A lot of kids reach out to me and be in the same situations that I kind of grew up going through. And I felt like, obviously, going through what happened just recently in Buffalo, that one hit home the most, because obviously Buffalo is pretty much home to me now. Been playing here for 9 years, and I have a house here. I'm building a house here. It's one of those things that it really hit home for me. This community's done so much for me, and I wanted to kind of give back. But for the most part, like, again, lacrosse is a primarily white sport, and what happened with the racism going on, obviously, in Buffalo, it hurt, because obviously, if I was in that tops, I would have been targeted. And so for me, I really wanted to do something that I could get more involved in. And I felt like it was the right thing to do. And I know it was something really simple, but for me, it was a big thing. And I hope people see it that way. It's not for me to kind of stand out, or I don't want any press around this. Obviously, there's stuff coming out because of it. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to give back to the best of my ability. And I've always been different. So I wanted to kind of do it per goal. I wish we scored a lot more. That being said, I plan on doing more as well. I'm trying to do, obviously, in the next 2 or 3 weeks, we don't want this to kind of die down. And I know those families still might not have that tops to go to. So I'm hoping to do a food drive down the road and kind of give back to the best of my ability.
You mentioned at the start of the interview, you're feeling beat up physically, probably mentally and emotionally. What are you doing now in this break to be able to either be even more involved, or at time, like, take some time to rest? Because, I mean, it's kind of weird to say, but you guys have the finals coming up, so you got to find a way to get some rest as well. So what are you doing these days to be able to balance both sides?
Yeah, I mean, I've done a lot of recovery throughout this year. I do a lot of Buffalo cryo in the freeze tank all the time. I do a lot of physio, do a lot of acupuncture. I do all the things to try to keep my body right. That being said, I honestly wish we kind of played this weekend. I don't like coming off bye weeks. I like being as sharp as possible. Mm-hmm. It will be nice for some other guys to kind of just rest up and really be prepared for next weekend's game. We're in a practice still, and then obviously it's a great opportunity for myself to kind of relax, but also give back more to this community that I wanted to do. Obviously, if I was playing, I wouldn't be able to really do so. So I can kind of sit back and think of what I can do and to help, whether it be, again, I want to do a food drive or just go help in that community. So I'm looking forward to doing a few different things. But it's Monday, so it's still early, and I'm just trying to kind of sit back and relax right now.
This or that, a cold plunge with the boys, just staying out and kind of breathing heavy, or the cryo chamber by yourself for, what is it, a minute, 45 seconds, whatever, a couple of minutes, and just get all that recovery done. Which one do you like best?
I like cryo. It's 3 minutes, but for some reason, going in cold water, it's not the same. It's hard. It's harder for me.
Okay, now you need to put us in the moment. You're up by a goal. Toronto doesn't look like they're going to get a chance. And the only reason, well, not the only reason, one of the reasons I'm asking is because those of us watching were never privy to exactly how much time was on the clock. The broadcast never showed that burnt-in time clock to actually count the tenths of the second to know whether the Rock had scored or not. What gave you clarity? What were you seeing from the bench, on the big screen, whatever, that allowed you to believe that you had won the game?
Yeah, I mean, that time I was freaking out, to be honest. I was, you could kind of see the momentum slope in the other way. They're winning draws, and our defense did a great job all game, but you obviously you're going to get tired at some point. And it was one of those things where you kind of see those things kind of happening as they go on, and you're just like, no, no, no. And then obviously they score, and then you're just looking at the score clock the whole time. You're just like, okay, please, 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 please. And at first I was like, no, that's a goal. Okay, reset. Let's be ready to go out there. And it's overtime. And then you kind of watch it, and you're watching the seconds kind of count down, and you're just like, oh my gosh, I think we're okay. And then you watch it again, you're like, oh my God, we did it. And as that kind of they came out and said what he said, it was just like a relief. Like, oh my God, we finally did it. We're going to the finals. And this is like a dream come true. It was crazy. We knew the series was going to be a grind, but I didn't think it was going to be that close.
Did they show it on the Jumbotron there? Because on TV, like, we didn't get a look of the actual ball entering the net and the time clock on the replay. So did you guys see an actual look of it and to make seal the deal? Like, Toronto could not go back and say, no, that, we got robbed. Like, did they actually see it in-house?
Yeah, they showed it. So they showed it first, like fast motion. And again, I was like, okay, like that's a goal. And then they did it on a Jumbotron, like slow-mo. And you can kind of see, the first one was kind of like, okay, that's hit or miss. It's hard to tell. Mm-hmm. And the second one, you could see it kind of like in the air while the clock said 0-0. And then, yeah, so that we were.
What were the fan base? Did everybody just like, because it was euphoria, right? And we tied the game at 10-10. And did the fan base just go, oh, like, was there like that moment?
Half of it.
Like,
right. No, honestly, it's funny you say that, because all I remember at the beginning was everybody screaming like, oh my God, they scored. And then when we realized that we won the game, it didn't seem like everybody kind of went down, because all the Bandits fans were going nuts. So it felt like we were at home, and it was just a roller coaster of emotions. It was crazy.
That is something. You got a word about any of your other teammates that you thought were really something in that two-game series that deserve a little extra attention?
Yeah, I mean, I want to say our whole defense, but to name a few, Steve Priolo's, like, he's legit the best defenseman in the league. He is one scary man to go against. I would not want to go against that guy. He's very, very underrated. And then another one, Justin Martin, he never gets praised. He's just one of those guys that's just soak shots, all that stuff. But I want to say our whole defense. And then offensively, Kyle Buchanan, he's a workhorse. The guy picks up every loose ball. He's very underrated. He brings so much leadership to our team. And I know Chris Clucci had a huge game for us, and Chase Frazier as well. But everybody stepped up at the right times. And at the end of the day, we're going to go as far as Matt Vince takes us, because he is – getting better with age.
So I know that everybody is probably bruised up and, you know, like carpet burned and all of that, but Cloutier takes a beating setting up picks for everybody, especially on man up situation. Does he enjoy it? Like, I'm literally concerned for his physical well-being at times, the hits that he takes.
He really does take a beating. It's funny to see him at the gym this morning, and every Monday morning he's like, oh my goodness. But he puts himself in that situation, and we can't praise him enough. We're the first people to be like, hey man, like, you're unbelievable. The only reason that was gold because of you. So he definitely wants to be a pure goal scorer, where he just put the ball in the net, which he does a lot of the times, but he does help set up a lot of people as well, and it doesn't go unnoticed.
Playoffs have been absolutely incredible for the National Lacrosse League, and unfortunately, like you said, you have to wait an extra week to get it started simply because of everything that unfolded in Colorado with a just heroic effort by San Diego to extend their season. What are you seeing there that will ultimately be, you know, your matchup in the final between San Diego and Colorado? What do you see with those two?
Yeah, they're both great teams. We're not familiar with really either of those teams. We played Colorado this year. We lost them by, I believe, one goal with that was our fourth game in 8 days. No excuse. They're a great team. And San Diego, we haven't played this year. So it doesn't really matter. I think we're just looking forward to the challenge, and we're excited to kind of get back at it.
Dane, over $15,000 raised through your efforts. Obviously, you can see for those watching on MSG, the message that we will continue to preach, and that is Stop Hate and Racism, Choose Love. You know that the Choose Love shirts are available now online. What would be your last message from all of this, your fundraising efforts, your support that you've seen through fellow players across the league that jumped on board, through the organization that you're a part of? How would you sum up everything as we move forward?
Yeah, I mean, every little bit counts. Could be a dollar. It doesn't really matter. It could be a can good. Doesn't matter. But I just want to thank everybody that's participated thus far. And we're excited to kind of hopefully give a chance to championship and bring it to Buffalo. I know you guys all deserve it. And again, I just want to thank you guys from the bottom of my heart.
Great stuff, Dane. Continued success. We'll see you June 4th in Banditland.
Thank you, guys.
All right, there's Dane Smith. The lacrosse community is it can be pretty quiet at times, you know. Like, I think peer to peer, behind the scenes, there's an attitude that is in the sport, but I don't think you see it as much on a social media level as other sports per se. And I think in wake of everything that had happened and Dane was doing, it was really impressive to see what Dane represents in the lacrosse community, because there were a lot of people that hopped on board that you might not have ever known would follow his lead quite like that. It was hopefully this is just another step for, you know, the sports world to set an example for the rest of the world.
I hate to say it in that way, but obviously the fact that the Bandits are having success, it shines even more of a light on what Dane is trying to do, and what the Bandits are doing, and what Banditland is doing, which is great. I have not seen as many Eastern Conference champion posts come through my feed from people like my son's friends in high school. They all reposted it, and because everybody is a supporter. I really feel that more than the other two franchises here, like, when you are a Bandits fan, you are in. They suck you in. The guys and the gals on the team and in the front office and whatnot, they really reach out. It's like they you really feel like you're a part of the team. And that, to me, is why I believe that what Dane is doing and what the Bandits are doing, not just on the field but off the field as well, have more traction because of their really close-knit feeling with the community.
Nick Rose, Toronto netminder, really eloquent in his words of support and respect for Dane. The Rock stepped up with a donation to the cause as well. Honestly, if you like the game, you couldn't get a better series than what we just witnessed. Even my oldest, who's, you know, become more and more of a Bandits fan, you know, I was watching it at home, and she was watching something else, but was watching out of the corner of her eye, and she saw what she thought was the Rock tying it, right? And then, so she looks at me, and she
threw a coaster
No, but then when the review went the Bandits' way, you know, she was like, oh my gosh, like, I'm all in on the Bandits, but that must just be terrible, right? But to paint the picture, this has been the story of the Toronto Rock since the playoffs began. Their first game was against Halifax. They had an enormous lead, and in the last second of regulation, Halifax had a putback. They thought they had won it in regulation. Same thing. Maybe by a tenth. We don't know, because it didn't get clarity. Yeah. It went over the line a little late. Halifax ended up losing the game in overtime. So Toronto survived that one. Thought they could have won in Banditland. Thought they could have tied it in Banditland to force overtime. And then thought they had tied it again on home floor. So this is what we're seeing right now. And obviously I detailed San Diego, Colorado earlier and the drama there. And I hate saying it because it can feel disrespectful to a team that has like a 700 winning percentage, but it's a coin flip league. It is so close every single time out. Doesn't matter who's playing.
Doesn't matter what your lead is either.
Right.
Like, it just, it Game has been yeah. like the runs have been so significant. Mm-hmm. Face-offs are so important.
Oh, my
when
gosh.
When you pay attention to the game, like those face-off specialists are so important to the teams.
When Dane referenced that, and they went up 9-5 on just this incredible two-on-one goal, Dane to Josh, they embraced at 9-5. We were still a little, probably, I don't know, 5 or 6 minutes yeah. left. I was like, oh, boy. From that point on to the face-off point, I don't think the Bandits came close. Like, not – there's a tie-up sometimes for a second or two or sometimes five. Mm. There was nothing. Like, Toronto literally just took the ball, and it was like, wow.
18-17 in game one
yeah, yeah.
with 10.4 seconds left. Wow. I'm actually – have it on ESPN Plus in the car. My son, we're driving back from Canada. He's watching it, and I'm like, what's going on? He goes, 10.4 seconds. They're up by one, but – you know, they just have to tie up the draw and maybe like, and the Toronto center, the Toronto faceoff specialist picked it up and started running towards. Yeah. I'm like, how, like, just it happens, right? Yeah. It just, you win it clean and you go.
Yeah.
Those draws are so big.
And that one was really interesting because they brought in Max Adler to be their faceoff guy. And that one, the only draw that they didn't allow him to take.
Exactly.
They gave it to Nick Weiss, and you know, kind of the same thing happened. So anyway, tip of the cap to the Rock. Tremendous series. Bandits are in the championship, and it will start a week from Saturday, June the 4th, in Banditland. Opponent to be determined, but our next guest is written in ink. It's Shayna Goldman, and she is next from The Athletic as we dive into the Rangers and Canes and the numbers beyond some of the things we've seen so far in the Stanley Cup playoffs. Stay with us.
We're back with more of The Instigators, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Hockey talk on the heels of that terrific conversation with Dane Smith as the Bandits are rolling into the NLL Championship, which starts a week from Saturday. We've got action tonight in the NHL on two fronts where the Panthers have to win to stave off elimination. The Blues pretty much have to win to make sure they can get it back to even before heading back to Colorado for Game 5. They are down 2-1, but of course enter tonight without Jordan Binnington and for the rest of the series. And then there's the Homer series so far. Just like we saw with Carolina in round number one, they have not yet won on the road. That means the Rangers are back in it after a strong performance from Shesterkin. And Shayna Goldman from The Athletic is with us to discuss that story and others around the NHL as we continue on this extended Instigators show today. Hi, Shayna. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're great. What is your single biggest storyline right now in the Rangers-Carolina series?
Home ice matters above all else for Carolina.
It has been that way, without question. Were you at all surprised that yesterday played out the way it did, based on your understanding of how the Rangers have kind of operated all year long?
Yes and no. I was surprised they made adjustments to their line combinations, because that's something we've seen in the last 5 minutes of a game when, you know, pressure's on to keep the season alive, not to start a game. But I wasn't surprised to see Shesterkin playing at the level that he was. And I was not surprised that Mika Zibanejad played better when he got away from the Jordan Staal matchup. But I think that they did get a little bit lucky that Shesterkin played at that level. You know, as the Hurricanes are really good at generating like shot volume, and they did again. And the Rangers did step up their game, so they were much better in the quality department. But they still need their goaltender to be the equalizer.
Now, I look at Artemi Panarin, and I know he scored the game-winning goal in OT against Pittsburgh in Game 7, but I am not seeing Panarin play at the level that I would expect. And I always said, well, I know it's the playoffs. I can't do this stuff at the blue line that I want to, basically play a high-risk type of game, but you would expect him to be a difference maker. He hasn't been. Is there some numbers that show that maybe he's on the verge, or is it just not been good for him?
So he's an interesting case, because during the regular season, there were stretches where he didn't look like himself, and he was still showing up on the score sheet. There would be a stretch of 2 minutes in a game where he would absolutely flip it on his head, and you wouldn't think anything was wrong. And then you look below the surface and saw his offensive generation numbers weren't there, and the defensive numbers weren't there either. And after the deadline, that did change. And, you know, a big swing obviously helps when they bring in a player like Andrew Kopp, who could complement that line better than, say, Barkley Gaudreau or Dryden Hunt could before that, and he raised his game. Come the postseason, though, it really hasn't been there as much. And yes, you know, I'm sure he's limited a bit in his creativity, And that's a conversation in itself, whether a player of his caliber should be at all. But it's not as encouraging as you might hope. That line does get some of the, you know, tougher defensive matchups, as in the other team's top defenders. But they should be in a better position to succeed when it's Zibanejad's line taking on the toughest forward competition. Yep. So that should free up Panarin's line a bit. And it really hasn't. I think they need a lot more from him on both ends of the ice. I think it's interesting when you think about the injuries too, like maybe there is something there. And it's tough to speculate on a player's injury status, but we do know Andrew Kopp and Artem Panarin both had injury issues to end the regular season. So, you know, there are some sparks you see of his game and some, you know, some plays where you see that standout ability, but it just hasn't been there consistently enough in either series.
Shesterkin, by the way, 11-1 now when making 40-plus saves in a playoff game. So you're right. Like, there's obviously no surprise based on past, you know, examples of games like yesterday. I think what's interesting, you know, Shayna, when we look at how the regular season played out, this is league-wide, how Florida was at the top in, you know, shot percentage throughout the course of the year. Rangers were pretty close. If they were at times at the bottom, then moved up a little bit. Like, if you were to have looked at those two models, which you do obviously extensively, would you believe that the teams are in the positions that they're in, i.e. Florida facing elimination down 0-3 in the second round, and the Rangers, quite frankly, because they haven't lost a game at home, are quite fine, probably, in the position that they're in with Carolina?
So if you think goaltending wins championships, which a lot of people rightfully do, then you wouldn't be surprised. And that's not a knock to Sergei Bobrovsky and what he's done. But when you look at his play versus Shesterkin's, it's pretty easy to see who's playing at a higher level. And then when you factor in Bobrovsky's playoff history and everything, I'm sure there's seeds of doubt there. When you focus on the team in front of the net, the Rangers are a team that they have the elite talent to turn it on when they need to and move forward in the season and in the postseason more than we expect. And we know that they're a team that hasn't followed the models and the predictions because of their underlying numbers. Florida is interesting because when the playoffs started, they came out looking like a very different team. And you could look at their deadline and say maybe they shouldn't have gotten grindier and slower and more physical with Ben Chiarot, and instead looked for someone that could have kept up with their speed game, because that's how they won all season. That's how they should try to win in the playoffs. And there were a lot of questions about how their like high risk style would translate to the postseason. So you can factor that in too. But once you saw the way the Panthers came out in the playoffs, like, I think from day one, there were concerns, because the Capitals do get credit for their defensive efforts, but that team should not have kept it as close as they did when we know where both teams are, where both teams, you know, we're at that point in the season. And so right now, when you think of where the playoffs started, I'm not surprised the Rangers are holding it in a little bit better than, you know, the Panthers are, because the Panthers just haven't played their game. They never got to. And then you see the struggles at 5-on-5 off the rush, and then you see the power play struggles, and you go, yeah, that's going to be trouble for them, because they aren't a strong enough defensive team or team in goal, I think, to be able to hold it down for those really tight games.
When you look at the Tampa Bay Lightning, it seems like they know when it's time to emotionally get involved in the game and do the little things. I mean, you saw it the other night. Cernak takes a puck to the face. Sergachev to the face. Corey Perry takes one in the warm-up. Ryan McDonough became the all-time leader in playoffs history when it comes to block shots, just passing Dan Girardi. How do we, and Duffer and I, pick the Florida Panthers? Shayna, like, smack some sense into us thinking that we should never pick against Tampa Bay ever again.
That was the toughest one for me. I was stuck on that. I originally went Tampa, and I was very firm, like, I'm going, because I picked Tampa over Toronto, and then I thought I'm picking Tampa over Florida, and I was like, no, Florida has it. This team's so good. They're gonna do it. You know, if they're gonna win, they have to go through Tampa. So I stuck to my guns with Florida then, and I have regrets too. The thing with the Lightning is, you know, we can look at their regular season, and some of their numbers I think are a little misleading, because their play did drop off when they were without Point for a stretch and without Kucherov for a stretch, which is understandable. But if we're looking at playoff data, a lot of it, you know, we're modeling, it's going to be based off of what they did in the regular season. And we know it's not at the level it should have been. And then you can factor in the fact that most of us thought the Lightning might be tired. Mm-hmm. They went on two really long cup runs, even though last year came off a condensed season. So there's so many reasons why to go against them. And even a player like Braden Point, we know he has game-breaking playability, but he wasn't at his usual level this year. He was still very good, but it wasn't that game-breaking level that we expect from him. So there were reasons I think some of us did pick against them. But when push came to shove in the first round, when they weren't the better team, you know, and it got to game seven where they were not the better team, they had Conn Smythe caliber Andre Vasilevskiy. How do you bet against that? And that's the goalie that's been in this series against Florida.
Yeah.
Are we all going to pick Tampa next round?
Well, it depends who wins Carolina.
Does it?
Rangers. Well, because
that's why I'm asking.
Shesterkin. Okay, so I made like a wild prediction. I said Shesterkin would win the MVP in the losing cause this year in the finals because I think he could be that good. And if the Rangers get there, it may be on. And then in the first round, I was again digging another hole and trying to hide because he got pulled twice in Pittsburgh and it was not good. So he's back to himself right now. So I don't know that I would pick Tampa for sure. It depends. Antti Raanta, is he still the best option for Carolina moving forward? Or we know that Freddie Anderson's been on the ice. Like when Freddie comes back, does the data tells everybody that Freddie should be in net, or do you roll with Antti Raanta?
So my approach to this considers the data and just like my thinking process. I think that for game four, you stick with Antti Raanta because I do think it's important that Carolina wins on the road. I think they have to get past that hurdle. We know they can win on the road in the regular season. And, you know, maybe their home wins, it's influenced by the matchup game a bit because they can stick Jordan Staal and whoever they want.
Yeah.
And you could see when Aho was stuck against Bergeron, you know, in Boston, it weighed on his game a little bit. So maybe there really is something to their home ice advantage, but I think it's more than that. Like, I just think that if they can get over that hurdle, they're going to be in a lot better shape moving forward. So do you put in the goaltender who you know has the better numbers throughout the regular season and was the better goalie, top five goalie in the league this year? Mm-hmm. Do you put him in? The answer should be a slam dunk, yes. I think it is for game five. I think if Carolina wins game four on the road, absolutely go with Anderson for game five. You built yourself a cushion, and if he is a little bit rusty, you have a better security blanket than if the series were tied. I don't think I throw him in there just in case, one, they lose on the road, two, they end up with a tied series. So I think my decision would be more so for game five than game four.
Incredibly, in this extended show, we're getting tight for time with Shayna, so I will keep it concise. Edmonton, Calgary, Oilers are up 2-1. Is there one single, beyond points, statistic that you would like to accentuate as it pertains to the great Connor McDavid at the moment?
This was a player who in the regular season was top 10 in every single passing metric. He is one of the best puck movers in the league. He can bring it up with speed, with control. He can create offense like it's nothing. So I would highlight that because he might not be scoring all of the goals, but I mean, anyone that plays on his line is benefiting from that passing ability. He can create time and space. He can make plays that none of us expect. You see how, you know, Zadorov game two tried to be physical with him and he didn't, you know, get off the puck. He just passed it and got, you know, shooting position right after that. He's incredible. So it's his puck moving play.
So the voting for the MVP in the regular season was done at the end of the regular season. Is McDavid even better in the playoffs than he was? Because if he played that way in the regular season, he would have got 150 plus point and been the clear-cut winner MVP. Now people are saying, well, how could you vote for Matthews? McDavid is on another level. Is he much better now than he was in the regular season?
Recency bias is really, you know, it's a hell of a drug. But I would say that Connor McDavid was playing MVP caliber hockey all season. And I think we get bored of it. I think we got bored of him and Sidney Crosby just thriving. But I do think he's kicked it up a notch because as much as the Oilers season is Connor McDavid and everybody else, or Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and everybody else, in the playoffs right now, it's Connor McDavid on another level. So if the playoffs were considered, I think he raised his stock in a Tim and Shesterkin a little bit higher than Matthews based on just the, you know, regular season plus the playoffs. But I think it's the right decision to have all three in there. But no, Connor McDavid single-handedly is dragging his team forward. It's so incredible to watch. And as much as I think it's easy for us to rightfully dunk on the Oilers for everything they've done, their roster construction and some of the flaws we know that they have and haven't addressed, it is a blast to watch McDavid do this on, you know, such a big stage.
You want to give us a sentence or a brief thought on what you're still anticipating to come from Colorado and St. Louis?
That's an interesting one because the Blues made adjustments. And as much as the Avalanche are getting more shots than them, they're keeping things close in the expected goal battle. So and yes, I know it's not played on paper, but I do think it's interesting to see the way that, you know, St. Louis can control the quality shots against. So can they keep that up moving forward? It's a lot to sustain. And, you know, sometimes it's a lot of chasing against Colorado. So I'm really curious. And also if maybe getting in the game, you know, in game three helped Husso shake off some of the rest. So I still think it's Colorado's series to lose, but I'm intrigued.
Quickly, how can we feel less confident with the goalie that was better in the regular season? How do we not feel as confident with Ville Husso as we did the last few games with Jordan Binnington?
He has to come out and play that level. You know, he was really great in game one against Minnesota, and he had a very short leash because they didn't want to fall behind, and rightfully so. But he was the better goalie in the regular season, so as long as that long layoff, you know, he didn't play for a while. As long as that doesn't influence his game, I would think he can get back to that level. But it's tough because Binnington outright was the worst goalie in the regular season and outright outplayed him in the playoffs.
Shayna, thank you. Continued success with the Too Many Men podcast, your contributions to Sportsnet, and, of course, as always, on The Athletic. We'll see you soon.
Thanks for having me.
There's Shayna Goldman and her insight and articulation to some of the things that happen below the, you know, the statistical surface that a lot of people see is really impressive. So
what did she say? Recent success?
Recency bias.
Recency bias is a
wonderful drug. And it, honestly, that
I might steal it at some point. If I can utter it in a good context, I find that that's a great line.
Yeah, it loses its luster if you don't deliver it with confidence,
yeah,
for sure.
She did.
But I mean, it is so, so true because we go through this every year. Oh, this is the best goaltending performance I've seen. Yeah, okay, well, we had one last year and we had one a week ago, you know. So, yeah, it is definitely true, and we know this. There's two tonight in the NHL, and we've got more than an hour still to go on this Instigators Monday 3-hour edition. We'll take a quick timeout, back with more, including in hour number three, Jordan LaBarber from Sabres.com to discuss our community's effort and response in wake of the Buffalo shooting and how we are still pushing forward with great hope and optimism and love at this point in time. Stay with us.
We're back with more of The Instigators, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Thanks again to Shayna Goldman for joining us in the last half hour here. She has just really wonderful insight across the league. As it pertains to, you know, common sense stuff backed by statistical relevancy and trending that we've seen.
She still picked Florida like us, though.
Oh, I know. Well, honestly, I mean, that's, you know, in this world where betting is everywhere, it's a really good reminder as to, you know, why I never did.
Yeah,
get too confident in the betting game, you know, because I know the reality is.
I did like where she went,
personally.
Though.
Yeah,
she's like, it was Tampa all the way, but she looked at, you know, Florida all season. It was like they were such a good team.
Mm-hmm.
So she changed last minute.
Yeah, yesterday was not a great day for comebacks in the NHL. I mean, you know, we saw 3-1 Rangers, 4-1 Oilers. 5-1 Lightning, so that, like, nothing in the multi-goal realm, which is where Florida excelled. And I don't know. I mean, I guess it's a case of the well running a little bit dry for Florida as far as how often can you replicate these heroics. It became second nature to them, but the cliche people that say, you can't expect to win this way in the Stanley Cup playoffs, are smiling a little wider right now.
They did. And listen, there's going to be days like this, and there's going to be days where multi-goal leads are going to disappear, and then everybody's going to say, look, it's the way the league is now. You can never sit on a two-goal lead, and that's the way it is. We haven't talked on the goalie interferences calls yet, and we will get to that. But the biggest comeback of the day so far, I just saw it come through on Twitter, is Sam Girard is actually at practice, not playing or not practicing. He's going to be out for the rest of the playoffs with a broken sternum, people. Mm-hmm. But he is in street clothes on the bench in St. Louis watching his Colorado Avalanche teammates practicing. I had a bruised sternum one time, and I don't think I could have, like, getting out of the bed was hard.
Yeah.
A broken sternum. Just think of it.
How did you incur your injury?
A slap shot in practice. Mm. Just to know about a week later, I got a letter in the mail. It was not even an email or anything at the time. It was in 1999. In the fall of 99, I got a letter in the mail saying that the chest protector I was using had been issued a recall for lack of protection in the sternum area.
Come on.
I kid you not. The space between the pads were too wide. I took a shot in practice from Matt Davidson. It hit me right in the sternum. It hurt like hell. And then I got called up to Buffalo like a week later. Mm-hmm. I was like, well, I got to go.
Yeah.
So they would tape me really tight so that the sternum wouldn't move. And they put one of those foam donuts on my chest so that the impact in the chest would be spread out. But yeah, I got a letter saying that the chest protector had been recalled. Too late, though.
Did you ever become fatter goalie in wake of that?
I didn't become chubby goalie like other ones, but
not physically. I meant equipment wise.
I did become fat goalie at one point when I was allowed to.
Yeah.
But then the restrictions came in and I slimmed down a little bit. So yeah. You find your way around it.
How is this a dangerous question to ask? How far removed from your playing weight are you right now?
Probably 20 pounds.
Yeah.
So not too bad.
20 under after all this time is very impressive.
No,
on your
it's 20 part. Over, let okay. me tell you. But I'm about 50 pounds, 55 pounds from my draft weight, which
oh
was,
my, yeah.
Which I was labeled at 6'2", 152 pounds mm-hmm. at the time. That's how I got drafted at.
Wow.
Yeah, it was.
Small goalie.
I gained about 15 pounds. I gained 15 pounds my first summer in Buffalo. And we lived in these apartments. We worked out with Doug McKinney, who's our strength and conditioning coach at the time, mm-hmm. out at Saberland Hockey Outlet, for those who now know it by that name. We stayed in these apartments right from across from the Marriott on Millersport. Mm-hmm. And we ate so much M&Ms and candy that I gained about 15 pounds that first year, which was good because I went from 152 to about 165. And that was much better for me.
All right, different form of goalie abuse. It's on Marty's mind. It might be interference. It might not be. That's still up for debate. It's next on The Instigators. Hour 3 straight ahead here on WGR Sports Radio 550 and MSG.